Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we are reviewing Silk Road, Judas and the Black Messiah, Tentacles, and To All the Boys, Part 3. And our topic this week, does Hollywood and entertainment have a cancel culture or an image problem? Let's get on with the show and find out. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm a fellow host, Don Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I almost got canceled this week.
Yeah?
True story. Amanda Sink?
Hello, hello. Stop being cancelable then, Aaron.
Well, you know, obviously, I say all the wrong things at all the wrong times, and that's what happens.
It's at all the right times.
I think it was consequences culture is what that was. That's what it was.
Consequences culture? What's that?
That's the same thing, I think, but it's made to make you feel worse about it. Think?
Is it make you feel worser?
I don't think so. More worse? Most
John,
worst?
That's not a word.
I don't know words.
I don't either. You know, we're going to do our news roundup, which we always do, all the stuff that's happened in the past week. Not very much, except for, you know, that whole Gina Carano thing. But we're going to save that for our topic, because that'll kind of tie in. So just hold tight. As well as, I don't know, Joff Whedon. So all that stuff will tie into the topic, so we can hold that off. So let's do less dramatic fare. Kiki Palmer and Daniel Kaluuya were cast in Jordan Peele's next horror film. There's no title nor details yet, so we'll have to hold off on that. Movie theater stocks are on the rise, partly because China is having a box office explosion, which kind of makes me mad, because the reason we're not having one is China. Face Off is getting a reboot.
You're going to get canceled for that.
That's exactly just so you how know. You get canceled.
Is that how it goes?
Yes.
Right. I'm just saying that's where the bat was. That's all I know. That's where the bat came from. Face Off is getting a reboot with director Adam Wingard at the helm, who says it will be a direct sequel. So I guess we'll get John Travolta's bald head and Nick Cage's hair plugs. I don't know, swapping sides. Brooklyn Nine-Nine is ending after its upcoming 8th season. The Last of Us has cast Game of Thrones stars Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey as Joel and Ellie for the HBO series based on the game. And the Oscars, much to Amanda's chagrin, are holding strong that they will be broadcasting live from multiple locations despite the epidemic that's still going on. Because they're that important. So, of all of that, Amanda, what struck your fancy?
What is striking my fancy? Okay, so I am not going to bring up the one topic that I know is going to get me an incredible amount of flack. I'm going to talk about the movie theaters getting like the some positive news.
This feels like the perfect episode for that. If ever you're going to do that, it feels like this is the one.
Why?
It's about cancel culture. It would perfectly test the water. We'll know by a week from now if there is a cancel culture. If you say something really controversial and you're not on the show next week.
It wasn't even going to be controversial. I think you misunderstood. Okay. No, I was going to talk about that one director, not the one who's in hot water. The one who just cast Daniel Kaluuya.
Oh, the greatest director of our generation,
yes,
that
this
one.
This is what I was trying to avoid, but I was trying to avoid saying it and bringing it up and transitioning into... I was trying to get ahead of it before it happened.
Yeah, see, you completely messed that up because I was going to leave it all alone until you put
oh,
it that
you?
Way.
I yeah. thought for sure that was going to be the first thing you'd say.
If you're new to the show, Amanda has,
about him.
Amanda has Brandon Jordan Peele as... The premier filmmaker of our generation, probably of all time, possibly.
Have you noticed how this dialogue has snowballed? Like, it started from he's such a talented director, I can't wait to watch everything he does because he's talented. It turned into he's the greatest of all time. He's the most magnificent of all directors of ever.
He's the greatest filmmaker of all time or something.
I did not.
We have this on tape.
I did not. Find
the tape. We have this on tape.
Play me the record. John.
Okay, what else? What else would you like to talk to other than the things we already know?
I just wanted to talk
to
about
true.
The good stuff, man.
Well, that's
like
pretty
the movie
good.
Theaters
Daniel,
doing well.
Daniel Kaluuya is pretty awesome. Kiki Palmer's pretty
he
good.
Is.
So,
yeah.
That's awesome.
No, that was good news.
I just like saying Kiki Palmer.
Why?
It's not kinky.
It's just a lot of fun to say.
Yeah, it's not kinky.
Make sure you say it right. That's all I'm saying.
I said Kiki Palmer.
Okay. I didn't. All right, Amanda, what are you talking about? China.
The movie theaters. Movie theaters are having some positive moves going on, not just because, you know, like we're seeing the... Okay, so let me backtrack. I'm not only excited because I love going to the movie theater, and I feel like we've had nonstop negative movie theater news.
That's fair.
Mostly just because it's been, oh, this is delayed, this is canceled, movie theaters are closed. So it's been very sad times for movie theaters. But I'm happy that there's positive momentum and progress happening for movie theaters just as a brand in an industry, anywhere. Because I kind of think that they need to have more stories like that and more attention drawn to them, and the fact that there's been no outbreaks that have been contact traced back to movie theaters. Like, they're a safer environment than a lot of other industries and places you can go to.
That's good news.
You know what I mean? Like, none of that is talked about. So to see a big story about the movie theater industry in a positive light is really great.
In a completely different country that isn't our own.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't matter. It's still positive.
What it does say, yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's fantastic. What it does say is that for all the people that say, oh, people wouldn't go back to the movie theaters. No, they would not. This is dead. Movie theaters are dead. Like, no, they're not. Look at China. They're doing great. As soon as they open them back up, they're like, yes, let's go in. Let's see something. Chinatown 3. I didn't even know there was 1 and 2. But there's a third one, and it's doing great. Detective Chinatown. I hope I got that right.
Detective Chinatown.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I get right.
Anyway, it's good news. And it's nice to have some good news. Remember Some Good News when it was cool when John Krasinski started it?
Oh. Yeah.
That was cool. That was sweet.
How about you, John?
God, we just jumped like three subjects. I already forgot half the things you mentioned, but I think I'm going to go with the Pedro Pascal Last of Us news. That's pretty awesome. I don't even care about the game. I don't care about the little girl that's an angry little girl from Game of Thrones.
the literal warrior. Yeah,
like the one that scared the White Walkers, that one. Mm-hmm. I don't even care about her. I do want to see Pedro Pascal in more things, so I'm excited to see this. Have you played the game?
I did play the game, and I stopped playing the game because I didn't like playing the game. The story is great. The gameplay sucked, and I'm just not someone who plays games just to be immersed in the story. That's why I have movies and television.
The first like 5 to 10 minutes of the first game, though, straight up made me bawl. Like, I was crying.
Is that when you stopped and you're just like, I'm out?
I haven't gone back to it.
It's so hard to play. But there was like,
was emotional. It wasn't about being hard to play. It was just so emotional.
I didn't get that because I don't pay attention. I keep telling people this.
You have no idea what I'm talking
about.
There's
a franchise called Gears of War, which is my favorite franchise. And there have been 5 games now. I've played every one of them start to finish. I don't know what's going on. I haven't paid attention to any of it. I know one guy's wife died at one point, and I'm like, I think I'm supposed to be sad. And I'm just like, shoot that guy. So I play games for, if I'm going to play it, it's to kill time. It's not for story. So I don't know. I do remember the opening, though. I do remember the opening. Because it's the only part of the actual game I paid attention to. I think it's Face-Off's interesting. That's an interesting, initially, we were kind of told it was a remake. And then they had to clarify, Adam Wingard had to clarify that it's not a remake. It's a direct sequel. Now, I don't know. Does that
mean Nick Cage plays both roles?
I mean, at this point,
just
he probably
kidding. That'd
could.
Be amazing.
I don't know if the same
probably be better than John Travolta showing back up.
Oh, God. Yeah.
He's actually not that bad. He's really good in badass roles when he's given the chance. So I'm fine with that. I just feel like, are they still up to it, or is this going to be
Cage
like
is. He's crazy still.
Their kids fight or something, because Nick Cage definitely can't come back as a character. So they'd have to figure something out where it's, I guess somebody could still just wear his face. He doesn't really look
cut it off.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a thing. That's the thing that they do. I don't care. We've talked about that before. We would love to see another Face-Off. I just kind of would like to see it with 2 actors of today rather than revisit what I've already seen, because you can't one up that movie. You just can't. So make your own thing.
Face Off.
And that you can't do most of what's in that movie. That old thing with the girls of the church choir, that couldn't happen today. God. No.
Nope.
No. It was offensive then. And that was 25 years ago. And I'm like, oh, I feel bad just watching it.
25 years ago, I was like, I think she's supposed to be 15.
Ah. Well, we've got a bunch of reviews to get to, so let's get into those. Our show is independently funded, therefore all of our expenses are paid from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And Basic Instinct, our Bad Movie Night episode on that is now up and available. You'll get immediate access. And that was, I would dare say, a great one. It was great.
It was, I would dare say, the best Bad Movie Night episode we've had.
Agreed. I loved it.
It was okay.
Oh. John was very, very wrong in this episode, and it's always nice to be able to point that out, right?
Yeah.
I figured you guys would get bored of it by now.
No, I mean, we enjoy your wrongness. It's pretty fantastic. We took a poll, and your Catherine Tramiel argument, you're wrong. You're wrong. You have to listen to the episode. I'm not going to tell you what it's about. But let's just say the debate that occurs, he was proven wrong.
I don't know if I was wrong, but there was an awful lot of people who agreed with me.
Well, you really focus on the wrong parts, don't you? Because you were wrong, but hey, there's a few people that agree with you, so you're not as wrong as you thought you were.
You know, I think this is still a matter of taste, and I believe there's enough people that agree with me to show that I have good taste.
No, there are many people that vote based on just pictures, and I'm sorry, that's just not fair. You gotta watch the movie. You gotta have a movie.
So you're saying that just off the picture of Gene Triplehorn, people voted on her.
I'm not responding because I said you got to listen to the episode to know what we're talking about. You're cheating.
Now you're spoiling.
You're cheating.
Also, some people Stop are just it. Naturally more drawn to brunettes than blondes.
Yeah, if you just look at it on picture, you got to watch the movie.
That's not accurate.
You got to watch the movie. And we also learned that John likes crazy a little bit. All right, so let's go into our review. First
too
one
much,
up,
maybe?
First one up is Silk Road. I don't anymore. Silk Road.
Yeah, so Aaron, you checked out Silk Road. Philosophy, 20-something-year-old kid, creates Silk Road, a dark website that sells narcotics. DEA agent Rick Bowden goes in, undercover to bring this whole thing down, and this is directed by Tiller Russell, and it stars Nick Robson and Jason Clark. Aaron, Tiller Russell is already getting a lot of notoriety right now because of his documentary, The Night Stalker, The Hunt for Serial Killer. Mm-hmm. That's on Netflix right now. Mm-hmm. And Silk Road is actually his very first narrative endeavor that he's done. So how did he do with this narrative?
Okay, so I was actually looking forward to his debut simply because I did enjoy Night Stalker. I was actually pleasantly surprised with how well-directed that documentary was. So I was pretty stoked. And this comes out in theaters and video on demand on February 19th. And I will tell you that it has style. It's well directed. It's not blowing me away. I don't think it's as well directed as Night Stalker was. There are some weird slow fades that I don't quite understand where, you know, we're doing a scene segue and you'll get basically a pause fade of a character where they pause their face and then they fade into the background. And it almost looks like your screen's buffering to a degree. I don't mean it to sound mean. It's what it looks like. That part I didn't necessarily love. And he also, there's several scenes in the film, which I have to be honest, the sound mixing was not great. The sound was overwhelming with music and whatnot to a point where you couldn't hear dialogue, almost like a freaking Nolan film, you know, to a degree. And I found that to be a little troublesome. But overall, I mean, it wasn't anything where I'm going to walk away and say, man, I got to see what he does next. But I also walked away thinking, all right, that's a decent job. Night Stalker was better, though.
Okay. You got Nick Robson, who my history with him is as being like the troublesome kid who gets himself in trouble and chased by dinosaurs. And then you got Jason Clark, who's been in a lot of stuff, and he's usually pretty great in just about everything I've seen him in. How did they do in this film?
Well, okay. Now, here's where I have the tricky part of this movie. So I know this story really, really, really well. And you probably do too, I would guess, because you know true crime pretty well. You're familiar with Silk Road?
Yep.
So there is that factor where you know the character a little better than you probably should. So you have to separate yourself. And at times that can be distracting because you just know that kid isn't quite that guy. You know, he's just not quite that guy. But I have to review it based on the movie. For the movie itself, he plays Ross Albright. Across the board, you know, pretty much how it's written. I don't think he does anything wrong. The only time I have an issue with his performance is when I reflect back to the character I know, because I feel like they almost paint him too positively to where he's, you know, he's a little cocky. He's a little full of himself. But honestly, he's a good guy. He's just trying to do good things. You know what I mean? He's not a bad guy. And I'm like, he is, though. Like, he was. He wasn't a great guy. He was a narcissist. He was an egomaniac. And those kind of things are hinted at, but never really come across swimmingly. But unfortunately, I got to base it on the movie I watched, not the history I know. And the character that they wrote, he does a solid job. Jason Clarke, on the other hand, I think does a fine job, but there are moments where I think he overdoes the tough cop battling his demons exterior. I think that's a little overblown in a couple spots, but overall, solid.
Okay, so yeah, you brought up the fact that you're a true crime buff. I'm a true crime buff. When you were watching this, how did this fuel your true crime appreciation?
Well, that's probably my biggest struggle, because I do know the case quite well, is that I kept going back to, even though there are many accurate parts, there are things in here that they'll happen and you'll be like, that didn't happen like that, did it? And then you go and you go, wow, that really did. I still feel like the kid is painted a little too positively based on who the kid actually was, because there was a lot of nefarious stuff going on. And he wasn't somebody that I think should necessarily be idolized. And I feel like to a degree, the film does that. So from the history buff or the true crime buff in me, I felt like you glamorized it a little too much. And I don't necessarily like, I think there's some glamorizing of it because it is a brilliant idea. Basically, you're doing Amazon for drugs. You know, it's kind of a smart idea. It takes away the danger, takes away, you know, some, but it's legal and it needs to be sold that way, that it's illegal. And he's not a good guy. And there's a reason why all these cops are going after him. It's not just because, they're trying to bring down the man. You know, it's just, or the man's trying to bring a guy down. All that stuff, I think, factors in.
You know what? If $10 full price of admission for this movie, what do you give it?
I give it $6. I was entertained by it. And if I didn't know any of the story watching it, I think it's probably a riveting thriller. There's just a couple slow spots here and there.
That makes me very interested in checking it out.
But you know the story. Are you worried you're going to like nitpick it?
I got bigger fish to fry.
Okay. All right. Well, next up is Tentacles on Hulu. It's Into the Dark, that series on Hulu where each month is kind of a different holiday. And on this one, a couple falls head over heels into a new romance and entwine their lives until their intimacy transforms into something terrifying. What the hell does that even mean? I don't know what that description tells me.
Basically, there's a woman who is going to this open house. She's trying to find a new home to live. She's presently homeless after leaving her former town. And she meets this guy who is also in need of selling his parents' house because they passed away. And the two connect and they form a relationship because they have great chemistry from the beginning. But there's something very weird about her life or some of her experiences, something that she's hiding, it seems, or she's not being completely forward and with him. And as that story unravels, there's almost like an illness that's occurring with him. And so he begins to get sick during their relationship. And so it's those two stories that are kind of tying together, and it culminates into a very dark horror story premise.
Okay, well, I can already figure out how it ties into Valentine's Day. That sounds like love. So this is one of those Into the Dark movies, like I said. Is this one done well? Because I think, they're on their second season, so this is like 14 or something that they've done. This done pretty well? I mean, would you consider this a solid horror movie or not so great?
Yeah. I mean, it was nothing that I felt I needed to come back to every year by any means. But I think for a one-off where you go in, you don't really know too much about it, you watch the story unfold, there's some pretty good acting. And I really appreciate the ending to it because it takes you in one direction and you're kind of like lost. And there's not many times where you don't really have a genuine theory and at least halfway through the movie. But there were times where I was like, I don't really know what the heck this means or like what's going to happen. And they end up tying everything together by the end of the film. So it all makes sense. And it's very weird, but it works.
I like weird. So $10 full price for admission. What do you give Tentacles?
$5.50.
All right. Well, that sounds like a good, solid You want to watch a horror movie at night, you can throw up Hulu and here you go.
And it's not long. It's like an hour and a half. So it's, you know, the perfect length for a horror movie.
So it's not a giant squid in the bathroom. That's kind of what I was hoping for.
No.
All right. Well, next up, Judas and the Black Messiah.
Now, this is one that Aaron and I both saw. John, did you catch this one?
I did not.
Okay. Well, you're in for a treat when you decide to, because it's pretty amazing.
Hey, spoiler alert. Like, get through this, man. Don't be like, geez, don't be throwing it out now.
Fine. Offered a plea deal by the FBI, William O'Neill infiltrates the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party to gather intelligence on Chairman Fred Hampton. Daniel Kaluuya and
Kaluuya.
I don't know why I keep saying that so wrong.
It's got that Y in the wrong place.
Yeah. Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield are noted as standout performers here, Aaron. What makes one or both of them so mesmerizing for you?
Kaluuya is the one that stood out for me. I thought, I am a revolutionary. Like, he just says it like eight different ways. And every time I'm like, yes, I will. What do you need me to do? I will clean the bathrooms, whatever you need. I'm on board. And what really surprised me is everything I see Daniel Kaluuya in, it's not that hard. Everything I see him in, he's very soft-spoken. I mean, there's a few movies where he almost just mumbles to a degree. So to me, in this performance, the reason why I found him so riveting as Fred Hampton is, number one, Fred Hampton was a captivating guy. If you ever go watch some of his actual speeches, he was a mesmerizing figure to watch. Like, he captivated his audience. I didn't expect that from Daniel Kaluuya, because I haven't seen him be that guy. And here, he just lights it up. Like, he's still he can be very calm and quiet and just kind of shy in moments. But when he's on, I don't want to say performing, because I don't think the real life person was performing, nor do I think Kaluuya was playing him that way. I think he was playing like he believes in his soul, everything that he is saying, and it is coming out with passion and power. And he just owned that. He dominated that. Stanfield was very good. I'm not taking anything away from him. You put those two together, they just didn't compare for me. I mean, I just felt like it was a good performance, and, you know, he should be proud. One should get an Oscar. Like, I really don't know if I can think of anybody that beats him right now in my mind.
Oh, really?
In my mind.
Like, he's your number one.
In my mind, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the story with films that provide insight to another perspective of the story, because there's been lots of Black Panther conversations and perspectives and misunderstandings and intentional, you know. So how do you think Judas and the Black Messiah fares in both accuracies and impact?
Well, one thing, and I've said it and I think in our Facebook group as well, but it's notable because far too often the Black Panther Party is kind of pictured or portrayed as nothing more than a terrorist organization. Would everybody agree with that? I mean, that seems to be
absolutely
the history that is taught.
I'm sorry to ruin your Black Panther Party.
Oh, God. Don't get me started on Forrest Gump. But here, I think they're presented as human beings fighting for their rights. Yes, they go too far in certain circumstances, for sure. On the same token, there were other organizations that were going way too far against them as well. I mean, I'm not saying one justifies the other. I'm just saying that was a reality. And there are a few facts that are presented a little lightly. I think at points the Black Panther Party is presented a little bit too almost too easy on the history, because the murder of Alex Rackley was a really savage thing, if you know about that. They dance around things like that, and they kind of talk to him, but you don't see those on the screen. But to be fair, that's been told before. I mean, that side of the Black Panther Party has been told. The side of humanity from the party has not been told, I don't think. And that's what they really do a very good job of in this film, is they portray them, all of the members that were involved, as being human, probably the most important aspect of what they were fighting for, just to be human.
Yeah, there were a lot of really impactful moments in this. I want to talk a little bit about Shaka King's role as both a writer and director, and ask you, what between those two, what stood out the most for you?
Oh, for writer and director?
Yeah. Was there a certain moment, maybe in the direction style or in the writing style, that stood out to you and said, this is a mark of Shaka King, or said, this deserves Oscar, or, you know, anything like that? Or maybe even the other way. Maybe you're like, this wasn't what I expected.
No, I mean, this is honestly pretty close to what I expected. I feel like really the strength is in a direction focused on the characters as people, as a humanity. And I think that's hard to capture. And he does a very wonderful job of working with her actors to turn in performances and to keep the camera moving and flowing. There was a little bit of a pacing issue because I think it was a little slow in spots. But overall, I mean, totally covered the bases and I think did a very admirable job.
So if the full price of admission were $10, which you probably paid because you did see it in the theaters, even though it's also on HBO Max, what are you giving Judas and the Black Messiah?
I'm giving it $7 if $10 is the full price of admission. Amanda, what do you give it? That's what I tell me what you thought. You saw it too.
Yeah, I thought a really great opportunity for people to see the other perspective of the Black Panther Party, because being taught about what it is from those that oppose to it doesn't necessarily paint the party in a very great light. And so being able to, you know, I've obviously done my own research outside of that to get different perspectives, but seeing it from not a white male perspective is always kind of nice too. And so there was, like you said, humanity that was given to it. It was looking through a different lens and understanding what these individuals were going through, what they were fighting for, and how they worked together to overcome a lot of tragedies and traumas and their everyday life. I mean, even the moments where they're trying to recover and rebuild as a team, if you will, as a group, just to survive and get through things was really gut-wrenching. And there were a lot of moments where, you know, I felt like I wanted to be there and support it, or like, let me help build things for you guys or something, because it was just, it resonated so emotionally with you.
And so what did you give it?
I'm going to give it $8. I liked it a lot.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so finally we have one last movie to review. It's To All the Boys, Always and Forever on Netflix. Amanda, you watched this. Let's see. So it's senior year, and school takes center stage for Laura Jean. She returns from a family trip from Korea, and you know it's time for her to start planning for college, and she's trying to figure out if it's going to be with or without Peter. Because you know what? What girl hasn't been there before? So, Amanda, this is the third movie in the series. Do we still love these characters?
Yeah, they're still very charming, and it doesn't feel like their story is being over-processed, if you will, which can happen especially very easily, especially when you're talking about a rom-com, a teen rom-com series, a trilogy at this point. But I think it helps that there's books that this was mapped out on a little bit to begin with. But these mm-hmm. characters are just continuing to develop and progress through their adolescence. And we see the struggles of their relationship and also the overcomings, the trials and tribulations, but also the other side of it when they do overcome things and they come back together, which has been what the first two movies was about anyway.
Like we mentioned, this is the third of a series. What makes this one stand out over the first two?
I think a lot of it is just the progression of their relationship into maturity, because the first one was very, I don't want to say childish, but in a way, because they're so youthful and it's about writing love letters that Aww. To the people that she loved, and then they received them. And, you know, then she had this guy finally in her grasp and they get together. And then the second one was about overcoming, you know, getting back together those friendships that were maybe damaged because of a boyfriend, and also deciding, if you will, between two people. You know, everybody's been there where at some point you're in a relationship with the person who's the person of your dreams. But then maybe an old fling comes by or somebody you used to have a crush on and you're like, wait a second, is this the person I want to be with? So you have those doubts, you know, at some point in your youthful childhood. And she had to overcome those. Here, it's not about her questioning her relationship with Peter. It's about her trying to decide what is going to be best for me as a woman and my life and my future and what am I passionate about? Where do I dream and see myself living if we're not in the same town going to the same college? So that's really what makes this one stand out. And I think that it's a nice progression of maturity.
I love the first movie. I never got around to watching the second one. After watching this, Amanda, what do you think? Should I give it a chance and keep up with these two, this series?
Yeah. Especially if you were into the first one, these characters only grow and they only get older. They get more relatable. They go through struggles that a lot of us can relate to. At some point in our lives, we've been in the place that they're at. And also in the third one, you know, if you remember from the first story, she was really trying to manage her emotions with the loss of her mom and what that means to her. And now there's, you know, somebody new in her dad's life. And could that become something permanent? And how does she feel about that? And it's all done in a very positive and light way, because one thing that I struggle with in films is I don't really see a step parent in a very kind and nurturing role, like in the person's life, the children's lives. And in this third film, we really get to see what that looks like. I've had a positive impact from my own stepmother. So to see that represented in the film where she can say, you know what, even though it's not my mom, my dad is happy, he's in love, she treats me well, she treats my siblings well, and she treats my dad well, this is all I could ever want. So that, I think, is a really nice, you know, hug while you're watching a movie.
All right, very cool. So if $10 full price of admission, what do you give this third in a series of movies?
I'm going to give it $7.
Is that it? Right? It's done? This is it?
As far as I know, I am not the book reader. I haven't read these books.
I thought there was three. So, I mean, the only way they have any more is if there's a more.
Is it going to be like Buffy, the college years or whatever?
Nice. Oh, did you hear that? You almost heard Amanda retract a little bit, like, oh, you can't say Buffy right now. You just can't.
I've still been continuing my rewatch. It's just sometimes it's a little painful.
Just got a little triggered.
Kind of hurts a little, doesn't it?
It does. I've cried a couple of times.
Well, let's get right into the pain. We're going to go into our From the Outside In topic. Does entertainment have a cancel culture or image problem? That is what we're talking about. Before we get into it, is there anything you guys are worried about talking about? Anything that you think might possibly get you canceled, so you want to avoid it? You don't want to even broach those particular topics. Anything? It's very important for this topic, I think.
Feminism.
for you, that's probably a good call. All right, here we go. I'm going to explain cancer culture. Not cancer.
Cancel.
Culture.
Cancel. Yeah, not cancer.
I mean, it is a cancer on our souls. I know. I get it.
Yeah. That's what I was going for. I'm sorry. It's not that I can't speak. It's that I was subconsciously trying to fill in some blanks. So I'm going to define what people say cancel culture is. Cancel culture, or call out culture, is a modern form of ostracism in which someone is thrust out of social or professional circles, either online or social media, in the real world, or both. Those who are subject to the ostracism are said to be canceled. Cancel culture refers to the popular practice of withdrawing support for, canceling, public figures and companies after they have done or said something considered objectionable or offensive. Cancel culture is generally discussed as being performed on social media in the form of group shaming. For those at the receiving end of cancel culture, the consequences can lead to a loss of reputation and income that can be very, very hard to recover from. Some people never come back from it. Kevin Spacey. Except for once a year on Christmas, apparently. It's weird. Okay, so it's a discussion. There's no top five. I don't know how you would do that. Like, top five people that get canceled. Yeah.
Oh, man, that'd be a...
Top five of your people you're hoping get canceled. Why is Chris Brown still around? That's what I want to know.
You know, that's a good question. If we are going to talk about that one, I'm happy to.
No. We don't want to go there.
Or so, Amber Heard, if we want to talk about her too.
Hey.
I don't think she's going to be around for much longer.
Oh, she will be.
Is that a threat to her life, John?
Be careful how you word things, man.
You know what? Screw it. Yes, it is.
This is how podcasts get canceled. Damn it. All right. Does Hollywood entertainment have a cancel culture problem? And use specifics. Don't just say no. Say why. If you say yes, say why. That's what I'm asking. Who wants to go first?
I don't think it's something that's anything that's relegated to Hollywood itself. I just think that it's something that affects those who have the biggest targets painted on their back. So it happens to Hollywood quite a bit because we have so many people that we quote unquote call our heroes there. And that being said, whenever our heroes fall, they fall big. Mm-hmm. And again, the bigger the target, the easier it is to go after them. So that's why it happens to Hollywood the most. But then, you know, from Hollywood, you have politicians. From politicians, you have like CEOs. From CEOs, you have Joe Schmo down the street, you know, dog walker person. Then it starts to really like go down rabbit holes. But yeah.
I think there's another element to it also. It's not just, for me, in my opinion, it's not just a cancel culture. It's not just people saying, no, you don't deserve to have your reputation or your work. When it's done fairly, if you will, it's about holding people accountable and calling them out on bad actions. Now, the problem with this is what is the spectrum of bad actions? And I think now it's getting to a point where it's all being determined on what Twitter says. And Twitter has some extremists. Twitter also has some bots. So it's kind of hard to say, is this how the general majority feel? Or is this just some extremists calling it out? Usually, I think it's fair, in my opinion, for people to call them out and to say, hey, man, I'm not down with that. I don't want to support you for, you know, whatever you are saying or doing. And I think everybody has that right. And I don't think that we should be offended by that or upset by that. What I think needs to be discussed about the extremism of quote unquote cancel culture is more about...
Easy for you to say.
Is more about how we influence others. And it's an immediate call to completely disintegrate everything about them. You know, we don't allow for apologies and for changes. Everything is so immediate. And it's, we want this resolved ASAP. And in most cases, if it's severe enough, yeah, for sure, we want that resolved. But it's also like, well, if you don't believe in what I'm saying, then shame on you. You should get canceled too. That's extreme, man. That's too far.
And there's a lot of that going. And I know some people like to throw consequences. There's freedom of speech, but not freedom of consequences. I know that's a popular statement to go around. And I get what you're saying. I do. But I think to completely ignore that this happens a little too often, whenever someone says something the collective doesn't agree with, would be a disservice. I think that's just simply untrue. And there are some things where I think the punishment does not fit the crime. You know, when you take, for example, because it's the most recent example, let's take Gina Carano, okay? She didn't like pronouns and definitely said some things that I probably don't think are that smart on Twitter about pronouns initially. She doesn't want to put she, her, whatever in her bio, and she made a joke about it. Was it beep, bop, boop, or whatever it was? And Pedro Pascal and her had a Twitter thing, but back and forth on this. But after that, or at that time, people were pretty harshly going after her over it. Now, I went through some of her tweets and stuff at that point when that was going on, and I'm like, okay, she didn't say anything hateful to anyone that was trans that I saw. I'm not saying it's not out there. I just didn't see it. She just didn't want to use pronouns. She didn't think she needed to use pronouns. I don't know. I don't think that's a cancelable, like you shouldn't be fired from your job yet for something like that because you don't want to use pronouns. That's your choice, right? It's your person, your choice. I didn't feel like she was mocking pronouns so much as other people insisting that she had to use them. And then, I mean, it was trending like number one, fire Gina Carano. From that point forward, everything she said that was remotely, even if it wasn't, I mean, she didn't want to wear a mask everywhere she went. Okay, she's not alone. But as soon as that was said, Fire Gina Carano was trending again. I mean, it just felt like everybody wouldn't stop until they got her on the one thing where, you know, she used Nazis as a comparison, which you should never do. That just seems like the dumbest thing ever. Pedro Pascal did it too, but beside the point, nobody should ever compare anything to Nazis unless it's actually comparable to Nazis or that time. It actually wasn't, it was before Nazis. I'm not getting into the technicalities of it, but you get what I'm saying. But
well, I think
but
that-
they kept, well, hang on, but they kept going. Like anytime she did anything, I'm not defending what she did because she works for Disney, the safest company in the world. Whoever you work for, they probably have a morality clause or they probably have rules about that, or that it's an at-will state or employer. They can fire you at will. And if you're doing something that reflects negatively on the company, they're going to get rid of you. So you got to be smart. I get it. She had every opportunity. But I'm talking about social media, the culture, not what's right or wrong, the culture. They kept going after her, like with pitchforks for anything she did, not just because they determined she was a garbage person. Now, that's what I would say. That's the cancel culture part of it. Not, well, Disney did what was right. Disney did what they needed to do for their company. They fired her. Okay. I get that. I'm totally with you. I understand that. But everything that happened up to that point, that's cancel culture to me. It's not right.
So I feel like there's a few things to address. One, they were absolutely bullying her and harassing her about not doing it. And it wasn't that she initially refused. It's that she didn't already have it done. And I understand where people are coming from and hoping that she'll become sensitive to the trans community because she's working alongside someone who has a trans family member. But it's not really everyone else's place to tell her, yes, this is what you need to be doing. The unfortunate part was her initial reaction, which I can only say from my perspective, and everybody deems it differently. Like, some people think it's funny, but yeah, it's a little offensive and insensitive. A lot of people thought it was mocking the trans community because she's like, ha ha ha, beep bop boop, whatever. And that's kind of how I felt about it. But at the same time, it was like, two wrongs don't make a right. Just because they were horrible to you doesn't mean you should respond and be rude back to them and try to mock that instead of just saying like, no, I'm not doing this, and ignoring people. It's a very complicated dynamic. And I think the other piece of it, too, is we want to say people shouldn't call out and it's not their responsibility to pitchfork for companies to make the right choices, but companies weren't making the right choices before people started pitchforking.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying if there's something worth pitchforking over, if there's a real battle to be won, okay. But they were all over, like literally anytime she did anything,
yeah, I know
they were
saying
on her. And I'm not going to, just because it's the popular thing to do, say, oh, well, she had it coming. Yeah, she did it to herself. She did, because she had every opportunity, you know, to have common sense. Everyone in the world should know, don't do comparisons to anything to do with Germany during the 40s, ever, or 30s. Just leave it alone. Never do it unless there's a real legitimate comparison. It just feels like bad form. On the same token, they were, as soon as the pronoun thing, which I think she was making fun of people that were bullying her, not trans people. That's the way I took it. That's my personal opinion. You take it however you feel.
Well, it's she, her, hers, or he, him, his. And so for her to do the three, and it's like, this is how I identify, and it's just like a noise. That's what it, where it comes to, everybody has a different perception of it.
But in the same time, I'm like, but after that, or at that point going forward, to keep attacking her on everything she did, how is that right?
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point. You know, you keep pushing her to the point where she's just like, fuck it, I'm going to do whatever I want. Yeah. And then that whatever she wants is something that ends up actually being pretty terrible. And that's just the downside of it. If she would have just continued to not engage with these people who are like, we want you to do this, we want you to do that, she'd probably be fine right now. Mm-hmm. Because the great thing about the internet is you can not pay attention to it. And you cannot, like, it's a simple thing that, oh, look, here's this thing that like carries the internet on. I'm going to put it down over here and I'm not going to bother with it. I'm going to keep living my life. How great is that? Like, I agree that there's some poking and prodding at her, but at the same time, this is one of those self-fulfilling prophecies in which she should have just like
walked away.
Decided, I know that I have a huge target on me, and I'm not going to go ahead and do anything that would be a problem to my career.
And it's kind of funny because the whole thing was like, she wanted, and I get, you know, part of where she's coming from, where it's like, if you don't agree with someone, they're going to call for your head on a stick. And so part of it was like proving her theory right. But at the other end, it's like, why would you want the other side to win? If she would have just stayed and like she just didn't, I don't know, I hate to say she didn't offend people because it's so hard to do. But if you know that your company is saying you need to be a bit more sensitive on the way you represent yourself because it's a representation of our company. And she's like, that, and then she doubles down, and that's really what I felt like she did, is she doubled down on it. It's like, man, you did this though, like you made a conscious choice at this point. And I feel like her scenario is so, it's so different than what the norm of quote-unquote cancel culture is. Like up to this point, a lot of it has been, we find stuff that you did in your past and we say, hey, that was bad. We didn't notice it then, but we notice it now. So are you a better person? Otherwise, we're going to take your whole career down.
I don't know.
Hers
about
was
that.
Like real time stupid stuff.
I don't know about that. I mean, well, Chris, you know, Chris Pratt prays and people think that he should be canceled too. I mean, just because he tends to be religious.
But he's fine. There's a difference.
Like, that's because he plays social media smart. But there were still a lot of people that were going, I mean, it was trending at one point.
It was just trending like a week ago.
Yeah.
There's a difference between people saying, nah, screw your opinions and your beliefs and what you do, and you should lose your career. And then your career just kind of hangs low for a little bit. And you're like, nah, I'm fine. Versus people who literally lose all of their opportunities because of something they did 10, 15 years ago, even 5 years ago. But it's, they're apparently a different person now than, like, that's why it's so shocking. I never thought you would be like that.
This is McCarthyism all over again, where you sit there and you've got somebody who a majority of a group of people decide they don't like them. So what do? They drag them in front of a freaking tribunal and they say, you have to defend yourself for doing, I don't know, living your life. And doing what you would normally do. And then we get to sit here and say whether or not you're an a-hole. And it's just exactly the same thing all over again. And it's not the first time in history it's happened. So it's going to keep on going. It's just that right now it's become so easy because everyone has a voice on the internet. No, you know, and
millions are unemployed.
So many judges
are bored.
Right. Person I feel sorry for the most right now is like Armie Hammer, because if you look at what happened to him, somebody set him up by removing all of their own text in what was obviously a conversation they were having with him, and you get to see only his side of that conversation. So the guy is completely set up and he loses whatever is going on with him because it looks like one thing, or can be looked at as one
because,
thing.
His
was mostly just weird. I don't understand why he got canceled.
The guy's got fetishes. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to be at a barbecue with Armie Hammer. I just don't right now. I just don't feel like I can trust the guy near the hot sauce. But what I'm saying, and my leg. But what I'm saying, like, it's fetishes. I mean, people aren't allowed to have fetishes. It isn't like he broadcast those publicly. It isn't like he was doing something publicly.
And it was up to that point consensual, apparently.
The way that we understand it. I mean, some, maybe it falls into grooming territory is what I think she alluded to. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know she said it was consensual. So why is he canceled? That's a great question. Why did they cancel Cara Dune's toys? Like, okay, you fire Gina Carano, but now no little kid can ever play with Cara Dune again. I mean, I don't understand that as being
this goes to the whole irrationality of what cancel culture really is, because you whip up a whole group of people into saying a certain thing, and all of a sudden if you show any sort of support for that thing, then that group of people whip their head around and start taking you down with whoever is at the center of their argument. So again, it's just like it's irrational, it doesn't make sense, and it's tiring.
You know what this makes me think in like a morbidly positive way? If a small fraction of the world can make Disney crumble under its feet because the potential to lose dollar revenue – imagine what could happen if even that same fraction of people came together under a similar cause, agreed on something for just one day, and were like, we're going to fix this problem, and we're going to hold, like, even politicians accountable to fix this problem. How many things we could accomplish in, like, 5 days?
What are we, French?
It's just crazy to me. Like,
if we tried to, you have, like, to, use it,
you have
for,
to be able to
for
recognize,
good.
Though,
yeah,
the power behind people to make these companies alter how they ever thought before. Because so many people for so long got away with everything imaginable. And we talk about why Hollywood has the worst cancel culture problem. It's because Hollywood has been allowed to do whatever the hell they want for decades, for so long. They have
not.
Well,
no, it's also because Hollywood is disposable to a degree. The people in Hollywood are disposable. You get rid of one pretty face, you're going to get another one right behind it that may or may not have better standards to live by. It's if you swing this back over to the corporate thing, how many times have people tried to organize a boycott of Amazon while they're ordering Amazon?
That's true, because they don't actually fulfill whatever it is they say they're going to do when it's a celebrity. I mean, they will with a celebrity, because what are you really out? But yeah, I'm not going to cut out McDonald's. You kidding me? That's half my snacks. You can't do that.
I need the pink stuff nuggets, man.
Yeah, and Amazon, that happens all the time. And it's like, yeah, every time somebody says that to me, no, I'm not doing that, because I'm not going outside. No, I'm good. You kidding me? Once they came up with 2-day shipping, man, I haven't left 1,000 years. It's a beautiful thing. But it happens all over the place. It's been happening for years, and not too recently. I remember that I was actually talking to someone, listener of the show, might not be after this, I don't know, but they were talking to me, and they were telling me that I was saying that I want to see what they do with Johnny Depp and Fantastic Beasts. And they were saying, well, as long as they cancel J.K. Rowling. And I said, well, I mean, she seems very sharp. She's kind of built an empire. I don't think J.K. Rowling's going anywhere. And they're like, well, you know, she's anti-trans, I think is what she is, according to them. And I said, well, having a conversation, isn't there a possibility that, yes, she said some controversial things, but much of her opinions revolve around her understanding of science and biology? Do you think that's a conversation we can have? And absolutely would not have it. Like, was basically this close to shouting me into oblivion just because I asked that question. And that to me is like, isn't that very important to a conversation, to being open to a counterpoint? If you automatically shout it away, are you even listening to whatever the point is anymore? You know what I mean? Like, agree or disagree, but listen. And I just feel like that's not listening when you're like, that person speaks, go away. Destroy them. There are people that say they can't listen, they can't read or watch Harry Potter anymore. I'm like, what? I don't know if she necessarily, that I've seen, done anything where that seems warranted, yet I'm in trouble because I don't necessarily feel that way. And I don't even like Harry Potter. Amanda, I know you love Harry Potter. I don't even like Harry Potter. I'm just saying, it's worth the conversation, isn't it? Like, just to understand where people are coming from, instead of just shouting at them to shut up. And that seems to be what is happening more often. You're on the side of whatever the collective feels. And if you want to have a conversation about it to understand or to get clarification or kind of to see where you feel, or maybe to get a better understanding of how they really feel, you're shouted into oblivion. And that's what cancel culture is to me. It's like not right. being able to have a conversation to even have an understanding of what other people think. Because your opinion's made up, and they better respect your opinion, or they better go away. That's it. Period.
On the flip side, I do have to acknowledge that there's a couple of different times where I've appreciated cancel culture making some things go away. You know,
okay. All right.
Bryan Singer, for one.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so my basic rule when it comes to, like, whether or not cancel culture is doing the right thing or not, as I look at the list of things that the person's being accused of, and I'm like, well, did anybody get hurt here? So if the answer is no, well, then they're fine. If the answer is yes, then people like Bryan Singer and Kevin Spacey can just disappear.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a fair assessment. If someone was hurt, especially in those ways, like Bryan Singer just needed to go away for many years.
Yeah.
I never understood how he kept going.
Not just
back.
Away anywhere, away to a special place.
Go to his own
reserved for those people who talk at the theater.
The only thing he gets credit for is hiring Hugh Jackman and bringing that wonderful man into our lives. Everything else,
oh, God bless.
I'm not giving him, I don't want him to have any credit for anything.
Right. That's fair.
I mean, it's just, it's sad. It's everywhere. I mean, people, what was it? Gone with the Wind? They wanted to cancel Gone with the Wind over the summer and Cops got canceled, which, hey, to be fair, I didn't like that show to begin with, but it was just because it featured cops. That was the number one thing. And I get it. I do get that one. I do understand that one. On the same token.
Well, Cops wasn't the only one.
No, it was
like
Live.
It. There was another show.
Live PD, I think, was the other one.
Yeah, like Live PD or something like that.
And that one had a much shadier pick. But either, I don't think you should ever mock someone who's getting, like, they're obviously going through something. So why humiliate them publicly? I just never thought that was cool. But I was fine with it. I just would have rather it went away because of ratings, you know, or something like
right.
that. And trying to cancel a movie that's almost 100 years old was just odd. I just thought, like, that's okay. Can we just explain what's going on, which is what HBO Max did eventually?
Well, that's, you know, that goes back to the irrationality of it. Canceling a movie that's 100 years old, canceling cartoons that are 70, 80 years old that depict a different time, a different era. It's not like those cartoons are out here trying to, like, say, hey, you know what's great? Let's wave these flags around that really have these pictures. No, the cartoons were usually making fun of those things anyway. So, it's, there has to be a line in which some thought has to be put into this.
I feel like maybe I have a different mind. I was just raised with ask me, you know, my mom was very much ask me. So if I saw something that I didn't understand, ask her, you know, where we grew up, a lot of stuff happened and I would ask her because I didn't understand why this was happening and she could explain it. And we would have a tough conversation about things. I don't know. Maybe that doesn't happen anymore. I don't know, but that should be what it's doing. I think uncomfortable things, uncomfortable situations, uncomfortable circumstances prompt a conversation, I feel like. So,
well, that's working under the assumption that the parents are there fair. Willing to have a conversation, where in a lot of cases, not only are children pushed to television and just said, go watch this or go do this or, you know, just pay attention to your electronics because I don't want to deal with you. Sometimes the parents are not even there or present. And so they're just, it's generational. The siblings are raising them and they go by what their siblings or parent taught them. And so it just continues and there's no breaking point to say, hey, this is not historically accurate or okay. And it's not something that, you know, when people try to introduce some of that stuff into the school system on a public level, then there's pushback because it's like, oh, right, you shouldn't right. be trying to bring this up to my kids. And so, like, where do we set this
impression.
Line? Thank you.
Yeah.
But it's like, where do we then interject that learning and understanding and who's accountable for it? Because we can't rely on the parental system to work because we already see the fallout in a lot of different ways. I mean, not every parent, as much as sad as it is, there are a lot of parents who don't have the best interests of their child or children at heart. And that's showcased by the high levels of sexual and physical abuse to their children. So teaching probably isn't on their priority list either.
Wow. Well, that took it to a dark place, Amanda.
Sorry, I'm just trying to offer like the other side of it. It's like it's very difficult for any of these things because, yes, we don't want something to be taken away and we don't want to erase something that happened so many years ago. But it's like, but then what are we, who's there to be able to teach that as an alternative? I mean, for television, I think the safe bet is like teach it before it plays.
Yeah.
And then you have that done.
And be willing to have a conversation. I actually had my opinion changed just this week. True story. Justin Timberlake.
We'll mark this on the calendar.
Justin Timberlake had to apologize or issue an apology about.
Hell yeah, he did.
About Britney Spears and Janet Jackson. And I'm like, Janet Jackson, like, what? I don't understand why that was a big deal. Why do you need to apologize for that? And I got to thank Tams for this one. So thank you, Tammy, because she kind of elaborated. And then I started doing more research because I didn't really pay as much attention to it when it happened. But after that whole Super Bowl incident where her breast came out. Many artists, apparently, they keep praising him today and Justin Timberlake today, but he was the one technically ripped the bra off. I mean, it was no one's fault, the way I understand it. It was literally a wardrobe malfunction. But Janet Jackson is like the only one whose career completely suffered from it, which I didn't know that. She was blacklisted by Clear Channel Communications, which at the time owned MTV and CBS Radio. So her next album, I think it was Demita Joe, couldn't get hardly any player promotion. And she was disinvited from the Grammys.
Yep.
I just, it's insane. I mean,
because they put it on her.
Yeah, they put it on her and they made her apologize. And it's like, she wasn't anywhere near her own nipple. Like her hands were nowhere near the breast. And it was basically like the bra came off or something when he pulled her off. And it was meant to expose just the red bra, not her full breast. And then it came up and she was humiliated, basically shouted into exile and just vanished for years, really. I mean,
he was fine. And none of it fazed him. And he didn't come out in like massive support of her.
He did like a couple years later, but I think it was too little too late, probably.
Yeah.
So I actually changed my mind. I'm like, you know what? Maybe you did owe an apology then. I mean, granted, it wasn't your fault, but you could have been a better friend. You could have been a better partner in that whole thing.
And same with the Britney Spears thing.
I haven't watched the documentary, so I don't know what happened. I don't know how much of that is bad breakup blood.
Well, the whole thing was that in many, many of his interviews.
No, she misunderstood. She thought I was asking. I'm sorry.
Oh.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead. Enlighten.
No, I was just, because she was kind of canceled for that. Like when they split up, everything was painted as though she destroyed Justin Timberlake's heart. And he released that video and it was, you know, about her and about what she did to break his heart. And at no point did he ever correct it. He went out in videos,
interviews.
And she was still a virgin, and they were like, oh, you slept with Spears, though, right? And he's like, ah, ha, 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 yeah. So he's, like, painting her to be this slut, if you will, which the tabloids just ate up and continued to call her that. And all of her interviews and all of her appearances had to be surrounded around how she destroyed him and broke his heart. And she was suppressed and I don't want to say blacklisted from the music community, but her reputation suffered tremendously because of that.
Yeah, that's what I thought, honestly.
It's pretty horrible. But and again,
to be fair, I don't follow much of that stuff. So, I mean, I know very, very little of anything that isn't the actual movie, the TV show, or the person acting in it. I don't really pay much attention to the public lives at all, or private lives.
Very sad because it affected her career too.
And her mental health, the way I understand it.
Yeah, a lot of things. The tabloids really affected that. Yeah. So sad.
Well,
it reflects on a period of time in which a lot of young actresses were, or, you know, young actors were attacked for whatever reason. You know, look at Christina, look at Lindsay Lohan, and though some of them, you may want to be able to turn around and say that some of that was brought upon themselves, at the same time, here we have somebody who's in the limelight who's suffering with an illness, and yet people are making them the punchline. It's just it's just going to make it worse.
Yep. Yeah. And sexualizing like little girls, like that's traumatic.
Right.
Crazy.
You think we're getting a little too quick on the draw though, with demanding others are canceled or fired? People just don't breathe anymore. Like, hey, is it really worth being fired over, John?
I'm trying to think it out because to most of it, I would have to say, yeah, there's a lot of things that we're a little too quick on the draw on. That we should be able to stop and look at the evidence, like let's say Armie Hammer, which we have somebody who's having a conversation about a fetish he has, but yet stop and go, okay, well, this is only Armie Hammer's side of the conversation. Why can't we see the other side of the conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why did that person take all the time to delete themselves from this conversation just to make him look terrible? That should be like in court, you'd be like, well, there's not enough evidence here for doing anything. So why is it the court of public opinion is so much more free to do stuff like this to people?
You know, I'm as much as I would love to say we are too quick on the draw to cancel people, I think a lot of times there's some level of justification for like when it actually happens, something actually happens to them.
Can we change it to justification?
Ha!
Jeez.
Come on, trademark.
I do think though, the thing that I say is more damning than the canceling of celebrities, because quite honestly, very rarely does it actually cancel them permanently. Like they may temporarily have to take a hold off, but usually it's fine, let's be honest. But when we try to cancel or attack one another for a disagreement of opinions, that's where it's like, okay, somebody asks a question for clarification. Someone says, well, I kind of see it this way, et cetera, et cetera. All of a sudden, if you don't agree with that, then they want to cancel you.
Mm-hmm.
There are some really, really horrible people out there that have done some really horrible things. But I also don't necessarily think that that means we should find out what school they go to, what job they work at, call their job, request that they get fired, because that stuff is happening. That is where I think our quote unquote cancel culture and being too quick on making these moves should really be focused on. It's the attack of other people for their opinions on what's going on in a celebrity's life, because that's where people get really hurt. The celebrities, they generally come out pretty unscathed unless they truly deserved to be canceled.
Yeah, well, I don't think Joss Whedon's coming back anytime soon. If
no,
if ever. Like, no. I mean, he didn't assault anyone, but he was just mean, is what it sounds like, you know. And you know, I have two minds to this. All right. Sometimes I think we're a little too quick on the draw. Scarlett Johansson, prime example. What did she do that she deserved to get basically shouted out over every mode of social media? She took two jobs. She took Ghost in the Shell. It's a great job. She took the trans movie she was going to do because she thought, great character. Maybe it'll help the trans community and it'll, you know, garner some awards. Maybe she was going for that. I don't know, sort of dramatic recognition. She's an actor. She took a job acting. She didn't do anything wrong, but people shouted her into the oblivion because she did that. That's where I think people need to stop and just think of why and what you're saying. Like, maybe you can just try to explain how you feel about it. And then once it reaches her, you know, enough people say it, it's going to reach her. Say it that way, kindly, as opposed to she's awful. You know, we need to cancel her. And on the flip side of that, you have Charisma Carpenter's situation, where she kind of did say 10 years ago, she kind of alluded to the situation of what happened with her and Joss Whedon. Because I've known about this for years to a degree that I thought he fired her because she was pregnant. But she never specifically said that, but she alluded the hell to it. And especially, I think there's one press conference you can find where she was very open about it. But
yeah, people knew.
Yeah, but people knew. But here she finally just laid out the details to kind of say, Ray Fisher has some credibility here. Nobody's coming to his defense. I'm going to come to his defense and say, this happened with me. He's not the guy you thought. And there are many other people that followed that. So that opened the doors for them. And there's people now that are saying, why didn't you come out sooner? Who are you to tell anyone when they should do that? Just don't stop.
Ugh,
you don't get to tell people.
That part is annoying.
That's a whole nother thing. That's a shame of cancel culture. Don't ever, ever try to dictate when someone can tell their own story. It is not your place.
You don't know what they were
you
going
don't
through.
Know
they
the
may
situation.
Have their own personal experience with it, and they're not ready to share their story. Maybe
drives
they're
me nuts.
Still trying to heal through it. It's not your place to determine that.
So, and that took many years, and she did try 10 years ago. Now she came out and finally just did it publicly with all the details. And at this point, because someone, I guess because Ray Fisher already came up, people will take her seriously now, you know? And that's sad. But I also think the business has changed a lot since then, even in those 10 years. I mean, you've had Me Too and you've had a lot of things change. I think Hollywood is always the last one to change for whatever reason. This so-called most progressive community in the country is not so progressive. I always find them very, very late to the game. So yeah, those are my two big examples. Like that took 20 years. Really? 15, 20 years, whatever it is. And
20 years, yeah.
Yeah. And Scarlett Johansson was getting jumped the second she took a job. She took a job. If we'd got a promotion, we'd be pretty excited, right? I mean, that's what I wanted. It's my dream job. And everybody just made her feel like she was an awful person for doing it. And that's the wrong side of cancel culture to me.
Right.
Don't like it. All right. So lastly, is there an image problem in Hollywood? Like, is that a bigger issue? Is image the problem? Probably a harder
question. Elaborate on what you mean by that.
Does right now, does Hollywood have an image problem? You know, for many, many years, they were seen as movie stars and bright lights and fame, and it's sexy and everybody wants it and it's glorious. Does it really look like that anymore? I mean, I know everybody worships celebrity and I just because they want to be famous, but is it as sexy as it used to? Is it as appealing as it used to be? Don't you think they have an image problem?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is the same as it used to be. Celebrity isn't what it used to be at all anymore, unless you found a way to live more like the stars of the 50s and 60s where you're able to hide yourself from the public and live a more private life until you need to come out and, you know, do the dance of the Babadook or something for the movie, and then you go back and hide again. Like, there's so much living on the outside and there's so much letting people into your lives that people are just like, it doesn't have the same power as it used to be. You have kids on YouTube who have more celebrity backing to them to half the people in Hollywood.
It's crazy. I mean, you have kids on YouTube that make more money than most actors or celebrities, musicians, anything.
Yeah.
Like, you're playing games all day. Man, I wish I would have encouraged that more when my kids were little. Like, right? Slack more.
All this kid is doing is opening toys and getting paid a boatload of money for it.
I'll never understand that. Unboxing videos. There are people making fortunes off that. I'm like, what is interesting about this? Go buy the thing.
You know what has been helpful, though?
What?
I had to return an Instant Pot because I got the wrong one. And the way they had originally packaged it was way too difficult to, like, reassemble. So I had to go watch an unboxing video to figure out how I needed to rebox it to get it to close properly. And that's the only way I could do it. And it worked.
Okay. So, I stand corrected. There's a use for it. All right. So what about you, Amanda? Is there an image problem in Hollywood?
Yes, but I think it's Hollywood's image of their image, their perception of their image. The rest of the world has already understood that we're at least getting to that point. Celebrities are not what they used to be. They're not heroes. They're not invincible. They're not perfect. A lot of us have had in some way or another, we've had our hopes and dreams crushed because someone we cared about who was a celebrity, we thought they were someone else, turned out to be a jerk or a sleaze or someone creepy or worse. However, Hollywood has not fully recognized that to the fullest extent yet. You still have them competing and treating people like garbage and like they're so disposable rather than treating them like they are talent and just being respectful to people. They still treat them like complete garbage. Even when we talk about Gina Carano, and I hate to come back to her, but she is a recent example. Her firing, they didn't even tell her she got fired, I guess. She found out on the internet, which happens a lot. Yeah, it happens sad. A lot. In that perspective, who do you think you are that you're above letting someone know that you're letting them go? Like, that doesn't happen anywhere else mm-hmm. outside of Hollywood. And so I think where the image problem is comes in Hollywood's perception of their
I'm pretty sure
own
there's
image.
A couple people in DC that got fired from a tweet, just saying.
Yeah. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And you know what else is an image problem? I think people, and this goes because entertainment websites and whatnot always run these articles, people are a little too gleeful when people get fired. It's just, I don't want to, unless they've done something to a person or hurt someone, I'm not going to celebrate. Gina Carano got fired from a job like she probably loved. And she probably in her mind was like, you know what? I'm standing up for myself because she did feel like she was being bullied and she pushed back. Maybe she pushed too hard. I'm trying to look at it from her perspective. I know that's against the rules, but I'm going to do it anyway. And so all these people were basically saying, good for her. Good. Glad she got fired. Why? Like, what does that change in your life? You don't have to go on her Twitter feed. You don't have to read those articles. But there were many entertainment sites that were saying the same thing, which obviously they skew a certain way, I think is a fair thing to say. And that's just wrong. I mean, I don't think we should celebrate someone losing their job, however responsible they might be for losing that job. We shouldn't be celebrating that. And that is an image problem too. And some of that is created because of the entertainment sites and whatnot that cover Hollywood.
Unless they're Harvey Weinstein, then we can be happy.
I said, unless they hurt someone. If they hurt someone, celebrate it all day. Celebrate it all day. But I just feel like people were, and then when she, what did she get? She got a movie deal with Ben Shapiro. I'm not a big Ben Shapiro fan either, but people were just like, oh, that's what you get. That's what you deserve. I'm like, she's still doing what you're not. I mean, so is she really a loser? I mean, she's still getting to do her dream. I mean, that good for her. She bounced back. You know, she's not quote unquote canceled. I think people just, man, you take way too much pride in getting someone fired when they didn't hurt anyone, you know, when it was just words. And I just don't know how I feel about that. But Hollywood itself, I tell you what, I just, it's amazing to me for how many years Hollywood has always tried to preach how more advanced and progressive they were, basically as their own culture, how they're, we're so forward thinking, we're so ahead of the curve. You guys didn't think black people would see black people in movies until like 3 years ago. So you don't get to act all high and mighty. I mean, Black Panther came out and Hollywood was surprised at how big of a hit it was. What?
Which is sad.
Yeah. Crazy Rich Asians. Oh, Asians will go see other Asians in movies. Who knew? I mean, give me a break. It's like you keep acting like this is, you're so progressive and you're so advanced and you're ignoring what everyone else in the country, world, whatever has known for years. You know, Me Too was a thing in most corporate environments 15 years ago. As long as I've worked in a corporate environment, all of those sexual harassment policies were in place. Hollywood adapted them, what, 5 years ago, 4 years ago? That's just pathetic. Pathetic. So yeah, huge image problem, I would say.
Mic drop.
And I love movies and TV, but don't necessarily love the machines that make them. Is there anything you guys want to say in closing? On cancel culture.
Oh, I think you got it right there, man. I think that was a perfect spot.
Yeah, I said mic drop. That was me saying, we're good. Let's move on. you closed it out perfect.
All right. Upcoming releases. What's coming out?
All right. So up first on February 26th, we have Minari. A Korean family starts a farm in 1980s Arkansas, which sounds like a really bad idea if you ask me. But anywho, this is written and directed by Lee Isaac Chung and stars the awesome Steve Yeun, Yeri Han, and Alan S. Kim.
And I've heard Steven Yeun is fantastic in that movie. Fantastic.
I can't wait. I love him and everything I've seen him in.
And on the 26th, we also have Wrong Turn 2021, which is coming to VOD because, you know, there's been enough of these Wrong Turn movies, okay?
Yeah, they had to restart it.
Yeah. What'd you say? Time to restart it?
That they had to restart it. they did so many of these Wrong Turn movies. Now it's time to start at the beginning all over again.
It's a circle.
Friends.
The circle of life.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry. I'm going to throw a lion off a cliff real quick.
Despite warnings to stick to the Appalachian Trail, hikers stray off course and cross into land inhabited by a hidden community of mountain dwellers who use deadly means to protect their way of life. Suddenly under siege, the friends seem headed to the point of no return unless one man can reach them in time. Kind of daunting. It's written by Alan McElroy and directed by Mike Nelson.
The Vigil comes out on video on demand on February 26th, as all these movies do. And a movie about a man providing overnight watch to a deceased member of his former Orthodox Jewish community. And he finds himself opposite malevolent entity in writer-director Keith Thomas's electrifying feature debut. I will review this in next week's show, but I will tell you, I've seen it, and damn, it's good. There you go.
Very cool.
Recent recommendations before we go to our weekly streaming recommendation from Amanda. John?
You know what? I was on a little bit of a trip this weekend. I spent some time with my dad, and one of the things my dad and I always do together is sit down and find a show to watch, and we watched Counterpart, which was originally on Stars. It's available through Amazon Prime at the moment. There's only two seasons because it got canceled after season two. However, very cool idea. If you're, I believe if you're a fan of Fringe, you can find something in this you'd like.
All right, Amanda?
I caught Framing Britney Spears on Hulu.
Oh, that's why you were talking about that earlier. I gotcha.
Yeah, well, I was already kind of familiar with it, so I will say that if you followed the Free Britney movement for the past few years, at least, then you're probably caught up. And there's just a few different details that are like, whoa, this might solidify how there is some really messed up stuff going on. But if you're not familiar with what's happened in Britney's life and what led her to different points and how really the tabloids and paparazzi have traumatized her in many capacities, and that she's living with PTSD along with her mental illnesses like bipolar and depression and anxiety, it really starts to talk about that, but also moves into what is happening with her control of her person and her financial estate, because now her father has ownership. Well, he doesn't anymore, but they don't tell you that in this because it just happened after.
That's a crazy story.
It's wild. It's wild that we can somehow have a woman doing all of these performances, a residency in Las Vegas, but she is not capable enough to manage her own person or finances. It's just bonkers. So if you want a little bit of light to it and understand some of the things she's gone through, and even an interview with her brother where he talks about how miserable she's been through this, and yet everyone's just kind of, it is what it is. Oh. It's so sad.
They just find piling up on her, right? They always have been.
Yeah, it's horrible. And you get to see clips of old interviews now, which...
Oh, that Diane Sawyer one. I'll never forget that one. That was so horrible. I assume that's in there. Is that in there? The Diane Sawyer one?
Yeah, that one's in there.
Because that's the one where she broke up from Justin Timberlake. And she was basically asking her about if she was cheating on him or whatever. I mean, it's just like, what does it have to do with as a musician? I mean, just... Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, and there's just so many different things about people making fun of her, and she was just the butt of every joke, and it's really horrible, and the way people talked about her being a scandalous slut in many different forms is just horrible. The way they talked about women, I still can't believe we're only like 15 years away from those conversations.
Yeah.
And it disgusts me. So.
Me too, Amanda. I actually want to watch that, and I don't. I mean, you know, I liked some of her songs. I liked the snake video. I liked that a lot. But, you know, that's about it. I don't really know her music that much. I really don't. But I know I've heard her story. And I just like, that's really horrible. That poor girl. And it sounds like her dad isn't doing much to help her.
Well, and he wasn't even really part of her life. They were never close. So it was weird that all of a sudden he came in and was like, yeah, let me take care of that because he gets paid for it.
I hate stuff like that. Well, I saw The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel on Netflix. It's 4 episodes. I did not know the story of Elisa Lam. Now I do. And my God, is it horrible. And also strangely addictive and sad. And I do recommend, though, if you are someone that likes true crime, psychology, I think this is one you should watch, because it all starts with, I'm sure many people have seen the video in the elevator where a woman is acting very erratic in an elevator, and the elevator is seeming very erratic, and it's mysterious, and then she disappears, and it's what happened to her. And you do get to find out through the course of the series, but if you don't know, don't Google it. Watch it in order so you understand how things went. And then the true crime sleuths, you can actually see how they... Contrary to Don't Fuck with Cats, that documentary, they kind of made the situation worse. So, man, I really recommend it. I really recommend it. It really lays out how obsession blurs the lines. Okay, we got a weekly streaming recommendation. That's something from Disney Plus this week. That's not WandaVision, Amanda, but you can find WandaVision in our feed. Amanda is covering every single episode of the Disney Plus show. I think you've only got 3 left at this point. Right?
Yeah.
But what else on Disney Plus is something you want to recommend? Tell me it's Bear Grylls, because he's on there and I like him.
It is not. I have not seen any Bear Grylls experiences.
It's too bad. Hey, but he's got an Army Hammer episode. So.
Oh, my.
You can see him before he disappeared. I don't recall any.
Surviving with Army Hammer.
Yeah. And they're like, I wonder what we're going to eat. And the whole time I'm going to rewatch that. And Army Hammer's like, you.
He's like, that thigh is looking a little juicy.
I'm not going to starve out here. I'll be just fine.
So I'm going to recommend Marvel's Hero Project. I know Marvel is kind of in everybody's spotlight right now, which is why I thought it would be cool. But it's a 20-episode series that shares the remarkable positive change several young heroes are making in their own communities across the country. These inspiring kids have dedicated their lives to selfless acts of bravery and kindness, and now Marvel celebrates them as the true superheroes they are by welcoming them into Marvel's Hero Project.
Very cool.
Yeah. Something a little light and positive.
I like it. I like that a lot. All right. Well, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in the Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our website is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @RJohnDraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at @SinkIntoThis on Twitter, and me on The Blacklist Expose and Presenting Hitchcock, and at @AaronSmirks on Twitter. Now, to close out, we're going to do Cancel It. This is a segment we haven't done in a while, but it seems apropos. We each offer an old cliche in movies or TV that really just needs to be canceled. Anything you can think of. So, same order, John, Amanda, me. John, what do you want to cancel in movies and TV?
All right. So-and-so dies in the beginning of whatever it is you're watching, only to turn out to be alive at a very crucial moment near the end. Garbage. Cancel it.
I'm with you. I'm out.
Cheesy and cliche.
Sucks. Don't do it. It's lazy. All right, Amanda, what do you got?
You know what else is lazy? Mm-hmm. We've been talking about this concept a lot in movies like Basic Instinct, Bad Boys, and it's about law enforcement who just don't seem to care or pay attention to DNA evidence. Whether it's their own evidence they're leaving behind when they're doing stuff they shouldn't be doing, or just completely missing how important DNA is sitting right in front of them that could solve the entire crime. Can we not be that lazy?
That's
Can we try just a little bit harder? Just a tiny bit.
Yep. Absolutely. I love that. Man, it just boggles my mind when people are like, oh, I didn't even think of that DNA. And Basic Instinct will still, it just blows my mind. It literally starts.
Like, wait, there was semen?
There was a glob of DNA on the sheet. Movie's over in 3 to 4 weeks. I don't even know why you need to worry about it. Okay, mine, this is really simple, but it still happens. I just saw this on a show and I just don't get it. Stop calling women bitch. Just stop it.
Preach.
If you're calling everyone a bitch, I'm okay with that. Man's a bitch, kids are a bitch, woman's a bitch, dog's a bitch, fine. But when it's exclusively women, just stop it. It's like 2021. If anyone's being a bitch, it's whoever's doing that. Whoever's writing it, whoever's making other people say it. It's old.
I want to add like a little asterisk footnote here. Unless it's a woman who's like, bitch, let me tell you something. Then it's okay. That is the only time it is acceptable to be like, bitch.
Okay. All right.
Bitch.
Fair enough.
Bitch.
All right, bitches. Well, that'll do it for this episode. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Try not to cancel anything on your way to it. Bitch.
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 You're good?
I'm good.
Amanda, you good?
How the heck do I zoom in? Oh, here it is. Now I'm good.
Not a single thing changed.
No, in my Google Doc.
Oh, okay. All right. We are live.
Excellent.
Hello.
I'm just giving a little bit of time because John is posting that out to people. If you see me in my Slim Shady hat, that is simply because it's cold and we're in the Midwest. And, you know, this is probably the first year where everybody seems to understand. Amanda, keep your clothes
on. I have a blanket.
Okay.
That's all that was for.
Okay. It didn't look like that. It looked like Mardi Gras. So it's not that kind of podcast.
No.